This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukraine warned Monday Russian forces were preparing to intensify their fight for key cities in the Donbas, where the death toll from a weekend attack rose to 30 as rocket strikes killed six in the country's second city. The attacks in Kharkiv and northeast Ukraine came as Europe braced for deeper cuts in gas supplies from Russia. Kharkiv's regional chief said Russian fire on Monday targeted, quote, a shopping center and civilian residents. Prosecutors in his region said, quote, six civilians were killed, including a 17-year-old, his father, who were driving past at the time of the attack. According to an Interfax Ukraine news agency, the AP's Karen Chamas is more.
The attack on the northeastern city of Kharkiv hit three civilian targets. They included a school, a residential building, and an area near warehouse facilities. Regional authorities described the attack as absolute terrorism. Many of those injured in the attacks are reported to be children between the ages of 4 to 16 years old. Russian attacks in the east have also continued, as Luhansk officials confirmed that shelling hit settlements on the administrative border with the Donetsk region. I'm Karen Chamas.
In eastern Ukraine, the focal point for a grinding Russian offensive, 30 people were left dead by Russian strikes over the weekend on the town of Chasiv Yar in the Donetsk region, the emergency services said. South Africa is reeling in shock from a spate of weekend bar shootings in which armed men burst into three taverns and opened fire indiscriminately, killing 21 people in total. Security experts say regional and ethnic rivalries, an organized crime extortion ring, competition between bar owners and political enemies are all possible motivations for the shootings. It's not known if the shootings are linked at this time. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken paid a brief condolence visit to Tokyo following the assassination of Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
The American people feel a sense of loss along with the people of Japan.
Blinken met with the current Prime Minister, Fumio Kishida. He said Abe did more than anyone to elevate the relationship between the United States and Japan to new heights.
Mostly I'm here because the United States and Japan are more than allies. We're friends.
Blinken gave Kishida a letter from President Joe Biden to Abe's family, saying, "We simply want them to know that we deeply feel the loss on a personal level as well." I'm Donna Warder.
A company applies to sell a birth control pill over the counter in the U.S., the AP's Jennifer King reports.
A French drug maker, HRA Pharma, has asked the FDA to approve what would be the first birth control pill that women in the U.S. could buy over the counter. Contraceptive pills are available without a prescription in many parts of the world, but have always required a prescription in the U.S., generally so health professionals can screen for health risks, such as rare but dangerous blood clots. The company says the timing is unrelated to the Supreme Court's recent decision overturning Roe v. Wade, but the concept is receiving support from the House Pro-Choice Caucus. The hormone-based progestin-only product sold under the brand name Opill was acquired from Pfizer in 2014 and is not currently marketed in the U.S., but it's been used by millions of women for 50 years. It's a high-stakes decision for regulators amid legal and political battles over women's reproductive health. Jennifer King, Washington.
The United Nations says it expects the world's population to reach 8 billion on November 15th this year. And it projects that India will replace China as the world's most populous nation next year. The report released Monday, World Population Day, said global population growth fell below 1% in 2020 and is growing at its slowest rate since 1950. The UN projects the world's population could grow to around 8.5 billion in 2030, 9.7 billion in 2050, and a peak around 10.4 billion people until the 2080s. Recapping our top story, Ukraine warned Monday Russian forces were preparing to intensify their fight for key cities in the Donbas, where the key death toll from a weekend attack rose to 30 as rocket strikes killed six in the country's second city. The attacks in Kharkiv in northeast Ukraine came as Europe braced for deeper cuts in gas supplies from Russia. Kharkiv's regional chief said Russian fire on Monday targeted, quote, a shopping center and civilian residences. Find more at voanews.com. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa, and thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for Yahya Swahib, and here's what's coming up.
Because they did not even take any money, they did not take anything, so you can't say maybe it was a planned robbery or planned what. It's just they walked in and actually shot randomly.
That was Sizakele Nkosi Malubane, the Minister for Community Safety in South Africa's Gauteng province, where unidentified gunmen opened fire in a tavern, killing at least 15 people. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Cameroon's government has called for emergency food support for more than 2 million families facing hunger along its northern borders with Chad and Nigeria. At a crisis meeting Monday in Yaoundé, authorities blamed natural disasters, insecurity, and intercommunal clashes in the past for causing the food shortage in the nation of 26.5 million people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Agriculture Minister Gabriel Mbairobe says floods and elephants have devastated several hundred hectares of farmland, poultry farms and crops, and killed an unknown number of cattle, sheep and goats within the past 6 months.
Il y a eu des attaques de chenilles légionnaires qui ont dévasté les récoltes.
Mbairobe also says devastating migratory caterpillars, crickets and weaver birds have disseminated thousands of hectares of farmland in Cameroon, especially on the border with Chad and Nigeria. He says close to 300,000 people find themselves in extreme or emergency food insufficiency situations, and 2.6 million people are not certain they will have a meal each day. He says food insecurity is threatening the lives of 6 million Cameroonians. Speaking in Yaoundé on Monday during a crisis meeting, Mbairobe said most poor civilians threatened by food insecurity find it difficult to cope with rising prices caused by Russia's war in Ukraine. The Cameroonian government blames the war for a 15 to 30% increase in the price of staple food items, especially wheat, maize, sorghum and rice, widely consumed in areas along the northern border with Nigeria and Chad. Cameroon relies on Ukraine for 60% of its wheat imports. The war has caused the price of a 50-kilogram bag of wheat to climb from $35 to $60, an amount the government says a majority of the hungry people cannot afford. Ephraim Chi owns a maize plantation in Pus, a town on the border with Chad. He says unpredictable weather conditions and changing climate patterns make it difficult for farmers to know when to plant.
At times it will go for a long time without rain, and at times the rains will come intense. So farmers are now confused when to actually plant their crops. And that is why we have a lot of poor yields now. People are cutting a lot of trees, and these trees regulate the climate. When the soil is so dry, because we've cut down a lot of trees, the catchments dry up.
Chi blamed civilians for cutting down trees for firewood and logging companies for what he said is their attitude to destroy the environment. Cameroonian officials say more than 40,000 people, a majority of them cattle ranchers, farmers and fishers, are still planning to return to the border region despite fleeing December 2021 bloody clashes over water resources. The government has not said how much it needs to reduce the food crisis, but that it is in negotiations with funding agencies and friendly countries. Last week, Japan's government donated $1.2 million to the World Food Program to assist vulnerable persons, including those threatened by hunger in Cameroon, Chad, and the Central African Republic. In a food analysis back in April, the World Food Program said staple food prices, early depletion of household food stocks, and declining incomes from reduced crop sales limit food access for poor Cameroonian households amid low levels of humanitarian assistance. The report says the ongoing Boko Haram insurgency in northern Cameroon and clashes between government forces and separatist fighters in the northwest and southwest regions continue to negatively affect the livelihoods of populations and drive high numbers of acutely food insecure persons. The separatists are seeking to carve out an independent English-speaking region from the rest of the French-speaking country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Politicians from French-speaking countries are urging their governments to implement laws to stop wars and have sustainable peace. They made this call at a gathering of members of parliaments in Francophone countries in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. Eugene Uwimana has more from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
Car les parlements sont un maillon fondamental.
Over the past 8 years, African and French-speaking countries, mostly in the Sahel region, have been a battlefield of terrorist attacks that have claimed thousands of lives. Adama Bictogo, Speaker of the Parliament of Ivory Coast, says African government needs to ratify and effectively implement laws aimed at addressing security and terrorism.
Nos actions doivent s'appuyer sur notre...
He says their actions have to justify and tap their status as representatives of the people, which gives them power, legitimacy and rights to reinforce democracy and peace.
Sans le respect des droits de l'homme.
Big Togo was addressing the 47th Francophonie Parliamentary Assembly in Kigali. The assembly brings together members of the parliament from French-speaking countries around the world. The gathering ended Saturday. Both the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda extremists have focused on the Sahel region of northwest Africa after suffering setbacks in the Middle East. Troops from European countries and the United Nations have been trying to push back the militants, but attacks on peacekeepers make their mission complicated. Lola Wahili is a member of Switzerland's parliament. He says many are convinced that peace is the ceasefire, but the act of stopping wars is the first step. He says they alone, as members of parliament, don't have the capacity to stop wars. Governments need the political will to do it. Some of the laws the politicians urge their government to implement concern migration, which can be a way for militants to recruit supporters. They also advocate implementing laws governing peacekeeping missions. Louise Mshiwawo is the Secretary General of the International Organization of La Francophonie.
Le terrorisme, les mouvements migratoires.
She says terrorism, uncontrolled migration, massive displacement of people, and difficulties in accessing basic facilities are the challenges. She says heads of governments need to put their citizens at the center, and one way of doing so is to listen to their representatives, members of the parliament. Rwandan Prime Minister Edouard Yene agrees there is a need to change the way governments work.
Car les parlements,
he says parliaments are important pillars of government, and they play a pivotal role in maintaining the rule of law and sustainable development. Yerente says it's time to realize that without good governance and strong institutions, their efforts for achieving peace will be in vain. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday at 2105 UTC, join me, Steve Miller, as I put the latest developments into a global context with interviews and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
Two explosions rocked the West African nation of Togo today, with one explosion killing 7 children and injuring 2 others. Authorities are investigating the incidents to confirm the nature of those explosions in the northern Savanes region, which has been under a state of emergency for almost a month now. Matteo Fracini Kofi reports from Togo's capital, Lomé.
Togo's army says it is investigating after the blast in the country's north, Tone Prefecture on Saturday night. Togo's radio television Motoag reported all the victims were children and blamed the explosion on an improvised explosive device. Togo's military on Sunday confirmed 7 people were killed in a blast, but gave no details on their ages or what caused the explosion. Some reports coming out of Togo said there were 2 blasts. Michel Douty is an independent security expert working with Togo's Interministerial Committee for the Prevention and Fight Against Violent Extremism.
Les explosions sont confirmées.
The explosions are confirmed, he says, but the nature of the explosions is not yet confirmed. Tom Prefecture is in Togo's Savan region on the border with Burkina Faso, where fighting with Islamist militants spilled over the border in May. Al-Qaeda-affiliated militants killed 8 Togolese soldiers and wounded 13 in Togo's first casualties in the conflict. Togo's government in June declared a state of emergency in the northern region. Matteo Fraschini Coffi for VOA News, Lomé, Togo.
A daughter of former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos said she requested an autopsy because he died last week in what she calls suspicious circumstances, and she's resisting plans to bury him in Angola. A Barcelona court spokeswoman said the post-mortem was authorized on Friday, the day of his death. No results are available as yet. Dos Santos, who ruled Angola between 1979 and 2017, had lived in Barcelona since April of 2019. The 79-year-old was taken to hospital and placed in intensive care after suffering a cardiac arrest on June 23rd. His 44-year-old daughter, Chise, whose full name is Welwichia Dos Santos, demanded the hospital retain his body until an appropriate autopsy is carried out. She also has filed a legal case in Spain against Ana Paula dos Santos, the widow and his personal physician, for attempted murder. Chise also argues her father wanted to be buried privately in Spain and not in Angola in a state funeral, which could favor the current government in the former Portuguese colony. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The United Nations said today that the world's population is expected to reach 8 billion on November 15th, with India surpassing China as the most populous country on Earth in 2023. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that overall population milestone is a reminder of our shared responsibility to care for our planet and a moment to reflect on where we still fall short of our commitments to one another. The forecast by the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs said the world's population is growing at its slowest pace since 1950. It should hit 8.5 billion in 2030 and 9.7 billion in the year 2050, peaking at around 10.4 billion people in the 2080s before steadying at the level until 2100. The report said while a net drop in birth rates is observed in several developing countries, more than a half of the rise forecast in the world's population in the coming decades will be concentrated in 8 countries. 5 are in Africa: the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, Nigeria, and Tanzania. Tavern owners, to curb rampant illegal logging and protect critically endangered African rosewood, Gambia has banned all exports of timber. Conservationists, however, remain skeptical if the ban will be enforced, as Annika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, Senegal.
Rosewood is one of the world's most trafficked wildlife commodities, fueled largely by high demand from China, where the wood is used to make high-end antique-style furniture. The trade runs rampant throughout West Africa, where forests have been decimated and soil degraded. Between 2017 and 2022, China imported more than 3 million tons of rosewood, worth at least $2 billion from West Africa, according to the Environmental Investigation Agency, an international NGO. In addition to prohibiting all timber exports, Gambia has also revoked all export licenses. Haider El Ali is Senegal's former environment minister and the former director of the country's reforestation agency. He says Gambia has banned rosewood exports in the past, but the laws were seldom enforced. He says that every time the wood depot is empty, they say they'll prohibit exports because in reality, there's no wood left to export. And afterwards, once the traffickers refill the depots, they restart exports. Rosewood trafficking will only end once the last tree has been cut, he says. LLE acknowledges that this time around may be different. Gambia's latest ban comes 1 month after the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, known as CITES, suspended all international trade of rosewood from West Africa. The decision applies to all 184 member states of the convention, including China. Raphael Edu is the Africa Program Manager for the Environmental Investigation Agency and Benin's former environment minister.
That is one of the strengths, the power of CITES decision, that the importer and the exporter have to comply. So even we may have some hesitation from the Gambia, we know that now there is no way to escape this decision.
Although Gambia's rosewood stocks are nearly extinct, the country continues to be a top exporter. Logs are transported primarily from Senegal's Casamance region, where the illegal trade funds a violent separatist movement. Sadi Gassama is director of Amnesty International Senegal. He says due to this rebellion, the state's water and forestry services, which combat illegal logging, no longer want to enter the forests of Casamance. And due to their absence, rosewood trafficking has also fed the rebellion, he adds. Separatist rebels also collect taxes on exported logs, according to local reports. Thousands have died since the conflict between the government and the separatists began in 1982, and a flare-up in March displaced thousands. The conflict is one of the oldest in Africa. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Tavern owners in South Africa are asking the government and police for protection after a spate of mass shootings at bars around the country this weekend. In the worst incident, gunmen opened fire on patrons in a tavern in Soweto, south of Johannesburg, on Saturday night, killing 15 people and wounding 9, 3 of which have been in critical condition. There were also tavern shootings in KwaZulu-Natal province and on the East Rand near Johannesburg, bringing the total number of fatalities so far to 21. Darren Taylor reports.
Police Commissioner for Gauteng Province, Elias Mawela, says the crime scene at Mglalose Tavern in Soweto is one of the worst he's witnessed in his 3 decades as a police officer.
When you see how the bodies are piled up there, you could see that every one of those people were struggling to get out of the tavern there. It was so difficult for them. These people, they were enjoying themselves here. So all of a sudden, they heard some gunshots. High-caliber firearm was used and it was shooting randomly. So for now, we don't have the details, what is the motive. But as investigation progresses, we are hoping that we'll get more information as to what is the motive, why targeting this.
Gauteng Minister for Community Safety, Sizakele Nkosi Malobane, arrived on the scene shortly after midnight. She says 13 people were already dead, mostly inside the bar.
Others actually died here on the corners, so the various corners here of the township, because their friends were trying to actually carry them, either getting help for them, because as you know, ambulances don't work at night. You'll call an ambulance, go the goose, while waiting for that ambulance. So they were trying to assist one another.
Nkosi Malobane says state security officials met in Soweto on Friday night, promising a crackdown on local criminal gangs and to rid the township of illegal firearms. Like others in the area, she wonders if one of the gangs perpetrated the tavern atrocity in response to this.
Unprovoked, as they came in here and shot at the people, because they did not even take any money, they did not take anything. So you can't say maybe it was a planned robbery or planned what. It's just they walked in and actually shot randomly, a massacre, really.
Nkosi Malobane describes Gauteng, which includes the big cities of Johannesburg and Pretoria, as a war zone awash with firearms. She says the tavern shooters escaped in a Toyota Quantum minibus, otherwise known as a kombi. Such vehicles are commonly used as taxis in South Africa.
So these kombis are starting to be a problem. Everywhere in various communities you will hear, Quantum. We now want to work closely with the taxi association. to say they must have a database of who are all these quantum owners in Gauteng, and why are these quantums all of a sudden being used to actually commit crime here in Gauteng? Because these men don't travel one man. They come in a kumbi, go into a place, terrorize.
Liquor Traders Association representative Lucky Ntemane says tavern shootings are now so common in South Africa that they only make the news when the death toll's particularly high.
This is a very worrying pattern that we are seeing, where our patrons and liquor traders are being targeted, it will seem. We do not know where to turn to, because taverns are social spaces where people come to enjoy themselves, you know, to entertain themselves. And now it will seem that our patrons are becoming sitting ducks for people to come and just shoot them.
Ntemane says township taverns can't afford armed security guards, and the police can't be expected to patrol the vicinity of every bar in the country. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The security situation in the Democratic Republic of the Congo remains tense, despite high-level talks in Luanda last week. The summit brought together Presidents Felix Tshisekedi, Paul Kagame, in an effort mediated by Angolan President João Lourenço. From Goma, reporter Zanem Neti Zaidi says many in the DRC are disappointed that the meeting has not brought change on the ground.
A few days after the meeting, clashes are still being reported in the territory of Rutshuru in the eastern DRC. Shomo Sendugu is among the displaced people who fled their homes a few days ago after the Luanda meeting. He tells me that the clashes between the Congolese army and the M23 rebels caused him to flee. He tells me that after they left, they meet many other displaced people at the accommodation site, where some of them have nowhere to sleep. He is disappointed that there has been no change since President Kagame and Tshisekedi met. Niyonzima Shema also fled as the Luanda summit was underway. Niyonzima found refuge in a more or less stable place. He tells me that he left his village and all of his belongings when he heard the crackling of bullets. He saw loyalist army soldiers fleeing and was afraid the rebels would meet him in his village and would not harm him. The situation continues to worsen despite the meeting made to restore confidence between Kinshasa and Kigali. The Luanda mini-summit was also intended to de-escalate tensions in the region. Civil society is also disappointed that no change is visible on the ground. Its president in Rutshuru territory criticized the optimistic statements issued in Luanda. He tells me that he strongly condemns the continuation of attacks by the M23 in the locality of Kanyabusoro, even though the two presidents met in Luanda and declared a cessation of hostilities and the withdrawal of the M23 from Congolese soil. He tells me that the war is creating a lot of damage and death. There are people wandering in the streets. We have no place to go, we have nothing to eat, and there are women who are raped. Many other members of civil society seem to be unanimous in saying that the Congolese army should be given more resources to end the war. For the activists, the path of dialogue has been meaningless. Zanem Netizaidin Goma for VOA News.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.